Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. My guest this evening is the founder of my most favorite dessert company, which later became my most favorite food, a very popular, very upscale, very elegant, very beautiful restaurant on the Upper West Side. Her name is Doris Schechter. Good evening, Doris.
Good evening, Chaim.
Now, I understand that you came to this country in 1944 in a passport from Italy under the direction of the legendary Ruth Gruber.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us what it was like on the ship, what it was like when you came to America. And then I have a few more questions on the remarkable fact that so many of the children, teenagers and below, who came on that particular transport went on to become very, very successful, whether in business or in the professions, at a higher percentage rate than any other segment of the population.
Wow. Okay. I was born in Vienna, and at that time my father knew that it was a very, very difficult time for Jews because they were being picked up left and right. And he went from embassy to embassy to try and get a visa, but nobody wanted us. However, he finally got a visa to go to Italy, and we ended up living in Italy as free prisoners of Mussolini. And we lived in a very small city, a beautiful medieval city, in the Abruzzo area. And when the Nazis marched into the little city, we decided that we would cross the front with the Italians, and we crossed the front to get into the Allied section. And there, my father worked for the Army, for the United States government, as a translator of Goering's speeches. And probably while he was working for the army, he must have heard about the invitation that President Roosevelt invited 1,000 refugees to come to the United States as guests of the United States. And then when the war was over, we would have to return back to our country of origin. So
right.
So then, you know, my mother, my father, my baby sister, and I went on that transport, and we arrived in New York City. And then from there, we went up to Oswego, New York, where we lived for 18 months. And I think, you know, all my whole beginnings were very powerful, very traumatic. And when we went to, when we were in Oswego, they had many different kitchens. And there was a kitchen for the Orthodox, and there was a kitchen for the non-kosher. And that was very impactful to me, that when I decided to open up a restaurant, I wanted my restaurant to be able to have anyone and everyone so that everyone could eat under one roof. And that's how I came to the decision to go under supervision and to have vegetarian food.
So how did it happen that of all professions, of all the possible businesses one could go into, that little Doris eventually decided to become a restaurateur?
Okay, so that's a, you know, I have reflected on that for many years. But I think what happened was that I got married when I was 18. I had 5 children, and that was my profession.
Yeah, I know.
And I realized that as my kids were growing up and leaving the house, that I had to do something professionally. So I turned an avocation into a vocation because I always loved to cook and to bake. And I thought, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to open up a little bakery in Great Neck. That's where my children grew up. And from there, and it was a successful little bakery. It was very innovative and very ahead of the time because most of the bakeries, you know, were very commercial. They used to get mixes, but everything that I did was always from scratch. And that's probably because we lived in Italy and everything there was done from scratch, that all our food was very fresh. And my father, who was an Orthodox Jew, never had any meat, so of course we had plenty of pastas. Pasta. My father had a little song that he would sing, and he would say, Montag pasta, Dienstag pasta, Mittwoch wieder mal pasta. So if you don't understand German, he would sing, Monday pasta, Tuesday pasta, Wednesday again pasta. So that was his menu, and that's what we ate. And my mother had a little chicken that she had as a pet, and she loved this chicken. And this chicken would lay an egg for me every single day. And it would follow my mother around all the time. And when the chicken got sick, my mother was kind of heartbroken, and she would feed it melted butter and keep it warm in a blanket. And the chicken was with us for quite a while, and then one day the chicken disappeared, and my mother was very heartbroken, and she claims that the landlady in Italy was so jealous of this chicken that she kidnapped it, and God knows what she did with it. Anyway, so that all our experiences there were so down to earth and simple and very beautiful in its own way. And the Italians are very loving and warm people, so that food has always been my connector all my life. And when my children were out of the house, I said, well, what am I going to do? So I started off with the little bakery in Great Neck, and then I had to come to the big city. And where did I open up? On the Upper East Side, on Madison Avenue, you know, which was very gutsy, you know, when you really think about it, because the rent
was
high.
Yes, just to start out in a super expensive place, of course.
Super, and a friend of mine said to me, Doris, are you okay? You know, look at where you went. You went to the most expensive street in the world. And I said, well, I don't know where I got my courage from, but I certainly had to have courage in order to do that. And we started off as a bakery, you know, in a cafe house. But then you have to pay the rent. So
people
come to me and say, could you serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And I said, you know what? That's how I evolved into a full restaurant. And my first dish that I ever made was split pea soup, because I used to love split pea. And we had a little teeny stove in the basement of 1165 Madison Avenue. That's where I was. And I made split pea soup. And that was one of the first dishes that I offered. And then at that time, my daughter came into the picture. She was in California. She came back and she started working with me. So we were a full-fledged bakery. And then what happened was, when we opened up, Florence Fabricant wrote the most fabulous review about all the delicious cakes and cookies that we were serving, which was wonderful. And then when we opened up, and decided to be a full-service restaurant, mm-hmm. Arthur Schwartz came and did this unbelievable review. And, you know, I was such a novice at this. It's amazing when I think back of what I did. I was such a novice that when Arthur Schwartz wrote the review, people were coming in from all over. And I felt that the woman that was working with me, she and I were like Lucy in the chocolate factory. It was really sad in a way. And I said, oh, my God, I really did myself in, because needless to say, there were so many people that were angry. What's going on? It was just this, and why long I had to wait. So I think, you know, that it's very important that before you do anything, I just did it as it happened, and because of my naivete. But you know what, Chaim, it's been many years.
It worked
years,
out for the best.
And it worked out, and people absolutely loved the restaurant on Madison
Avenue. On 72nd.
We're
talking Madison now, okay.
Yeah, on Madison. And I had a wonderful following. And when we went under supervision, I was a little bit scared, to be honest with you, because then people would know publicly that I'm Jewish. But then it turned out, and, you know, because of my background, because of where I came
mm-hmm.
from.
Right.
You know,
right.
I wasn't sure, being in the big city and being that open. But you know what happened? It was important for me to stand up for who I am and where I came from, you know, with pride and
right.
Fortitude. And, you know, it turned out that people came to me and said, you know what? Now, we never knew when the holidays were. So you were our educator. So that made me really feel very good. And then when we moved to 45th Street, we went to, we had that whole open space, you know, the outdoor, we had an open cafe in the front.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I did?
Right.
I loved the Sukkot, you know, Sukkot. And when at home, when we lived in Great Neck, I always had the most beautiful sukkah. But before it became very beautiful, my gardener used to put it up for me, and people would think that it looked like a manger, you know. He made it look like a little manger. But then we became a lot sophisticated, and it was really out of this world, and I loved that. So when we came to 45th Street, I put up a sukkah in front of the restaurant. And I don't know, were you ever there, Chaim? When we had the sukkah?
Not on the one on 45th Street, no.
Okay. And to me, that was such a fabulous feeling, because when you were in that sukkah, it transported you to another place, and it was magnificent, you know, with the fruits hanging. Everyone marveled at it. As a matter of fact, one year, the whole story was in the, you know, they have a little article. It's a Metropolitan Diary. And
mm-hmm.
This woman wrote in and she said, could you believe that on a street in Manhattan, on 45th Street, you walk down the street and you go into a sukkah? She said it just brought back all memories of early childhood. But I have to tell you that when we did that, I had police protection 24/7. Because, you know, you could be a target. And people really enjoyed it. People of all religion. You know, they just found it so transforming that, you know, just the thought of being, sitting outside and eating under the sukkah was a wonderful experience. But, you know, unfortunately, we were on 45th Street for 15
mm-hmm.
years, and then the owner of the building would not allow me to do it anymore. So it was very heartbreaking. So, but you know what? You move on, and
right
here on 76th.
And it's a very beautiful, beautiful location.
Right, it's a beautiful location, and my daughter and my son-in-law and I really did this restaurant exactly the way we wanted it, and I wanted a hip, upscale place. And, you know, with the little Italian, you know, feeling in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really reflects who we are, you know, between the outdoor, with between the enclosed cafe, the cakes, and the restaurant itself. So we're very happy here. And people would call and say, do you have a sukkah this year? And my son-in-law decided, kind of campy, that we would call the Chabad, and we put one of those temporary sukkahs on
the
flatbed, you know, and it's not exactly what I love, but it was, you know, it's fun. At least we were there to make sure that if somebody needed the sukkah, it was there for them.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, Howard Stern came with his daughter, I think his daughter, because my daughter called me and said, you won't believe who's eating in the sukkah. So that, you know, it's fun.
Howard,
you know,
Stern identifies himself as Jewish? Wow.
Wow, right? I mean, who knows,
yeah,
but it did come. So that, you know, so you meet very interesting people. What I felt badly about when it came to 45th Street, because 45th Street, I felt, was the crossroads of the Jewish world, and everyone
mm-hmm.
came from the head rabbi of Israel. Do you know Rabbi Metzger?
Right. Rabbi
Israel?
Metzger. Yes.
Yeah. To Bibi Netanyahu, to mm-hmm. people like me. You know, it's to Michael Bloomberg, to Joe Lieberman. So it was a comfortable place for people to greet and meet, and people from all over the world. But now this is all happening here, too. So it's been an interesting journey.
Well, for one thing, the place is very unusual, especially your back area.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you feel very, very relaxed. That little garden that you see
yeah.
right through the window,
right.
it's great. I mean, I've been there a few times for a late breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And each time, it made my day just to sit in the back, just to look out from that window.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. And what was wonderful when we excavated everything here and when we did it the way we wanted, we got all the good energy coming through. And I love good energy. It makes me feel happy and safe and makes me smile.
Now, let's talk about Passover. Is my most favorite food doing anything special for Passover?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, I did a show with the Jewish channel this morning, and my chef and I put together a special recipe for Passover. It's a Passover vegan veggie burger, and he and I worked on the recipe together, and we had so much fun doing it. And we had a little cooking demonstration, and we also did a dessert. We did a Viennese crescent, which is also good for vegan and also good for Passover. So we did that. We have a great menu, a Passover cake menu, because we kosher our bakery. And we have an extensive menu for cakes for people to take for the whole
mm-hmm.
holiday. And we also have a menu in the restaurant, because next Monday and Tuesday we will be koshering the restaurant. And on Wednesday
mm-hmm.
We will
right.
be kosher for Passover.
Are you going to be having the Sidorim at the restaurant?
No, we're not.
No.
I'm very involved with the Primo Levy organization, and the director, Natalia Andreini, said, how about if we do a Italian Seder, which I would have been very much interested in, but it's just too much. There's so much going on here that it's a little bit too much for us to handle. But it would be fun to do a vegetarian Seder, don't you think? Although we do it for some people. People call up who don't eat meat, and my chef does, a vegetarian and fish dinners for the Seders. So that's very nice. So, we try to accommodate everyone, and that's our...
What are some of the desserts that you have planned for Passover?
Okay. We have a vegan and regular chocolate brownies that are so delicious. One is cakey and one is fudgy and out of this world. We have, I can tell you this also, when my husband and I have gone to Paris in previous years, we always used to go to a bakery cafe called La Durée. And there was the first time that I ate a macaron. It's that
cookie. Which is very different from what we call macaroon. It's a completely different animal.
Completely different. So I went up to the owner and I said, I introduced myself and I said, I love these cookies and I have a place on Madison Avenue, a bakery on Madison Avenue. Could you give me the recipe? And he said, no. So all of these years, I was thinking about it and then we went looking for books on this recipe. But you know what? A couple of years ago, we finally perfected the recipe, and we had them for Passover. And they are really delicious. We had them filled with chocolate. We had them filled with, a coffee filling, raspberry, lemon, orange, buttercream, and they're very wonderful. And then, of course, the first cookie that I ever made that I sold many years ago to ANS and to Macy's was the vanilla meringue. So, of course, we have that. We have the meringues. We have the success cake, which is layers of almond meringue with vanilla buttercream and toasted almonds going all around. We have a seven-layer cake. We have a plum tart. We have an apple tart. We have a vanilla cake with chocolate mousse. And a bunch, a whole bunch of other things. But we can do it. Wait a minute. I'm looking at my menu here. Okay. Success cake, marjolaine, seven-layer. Lemon Genoise layer cake with fresh lemon filling, marble pound cake, apple crumb cake, chocolate mousse bomb, and then we had the flourless chocolate cake. And I was on Martha Stewart many years ago, and we did that, the demo for Passover. And she loved that segment so much that she ran it for years and years and years. Then we have the raspberry Linzer tart. That was, and we have the apple tart, plum tart, lemon tart, vanilla meringues, and the chocolate nut meringues. So I think that I gave you a very good cross section.
Not only that, but you also did something terribly unfair. I did
what
not
did
know
do?
That I was starved. Now listening to you, now I am totally starved.
You're hungry,
how could
right?
you?
Right. And then I have to tell you that when I first started in Great Neck, I had this young guy who thought he was my sixth child, who was the most fabulous baker from Israel. He was also a dancer, and he helped me create all of these wonderful macaroons, not macarons, but macaroons. And
mm-hmm.
we did chocolate macaroons, we did coconut macaroons, we did almond macaroons, we did walnut macaroons. We don't have as many now because, you know, we put other things in their place. But he and I worked on all of these, and they were amazing. As a matter of fact, once the New York Times did a whole article on the macaroons, and people absolutely loved them. You know, as I'm talking to you, I'm salivating, thinking of the coconut macaroon. And then, you know, we dipped them in chocolate also.
Right.
So it's, you know, as I said, this has been a journey for me. And I realized, you know, this year that that food is really the connector. Food is, you know, is love. Food is caring and warmth. And I think coming from where I came from, that's an important factor, you know, in my life. And someone told me that a lot of Holocaust survivors do go into the service business. I don't know if you've heard that before.
Well, my parents certainly did.
What?
My parents certainly did.
Yeah?
Both in South America and then in 62 when we came to the States, yes.
Right. So, anyway, and I think my an important message for me to give to people is that to take the, you know, I think it's important. I remembered when I did my first book, my most favorite dessert company cookbook, and my editor decided that she wanted only part of desserts. So we sent out the proposal with, you know, with samples of all the different things that I do, because my whole goal in life was to show people that kosher pastries can be delicious. So when I sent out the different samples of things that we did, all the publishers wrote back and said, "I can't believe it's not butter." So I really felt as if I achieved my goal.
Okay, and what spurred you on to write the second book?
No, the second book was
Oma's Table.
Was Oma's Table, and my literary agent said Penguin wants to do a book on grandmothers. So I thought they were talking about me, but no, they were talking about my grandmother. And my grandmother was from Vienna.
Ah.
And we didn't live in Vienna. You know, we lived in Italy. So I had to recreate these recipes of how I thought they would taste and everything that she made. And you know what? I had a cross-section of people. I had my Austrian cousin, I had Hungarian friends, I had the Austrian consul general that, you know, was the counselor to the Austrian government here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I invited him, and whenever they taste, I was able to recreate from fantasy what the food tasted like in Vienna. I was able to do that. So that was an interesting journey for me. And I did all the recipes that they talked about, that they fantasized about in my family, and things that my grandmother made. So so that took, you know, a year, and I had many tastings at my home, and it was a lot of fun. Now I want to do another book that I want to work on, and that's going to be a vegetarian and vegan cookbook of all the different things that we do serve in the restaurant. I think that, and it all has to do with you know, my father, who always adhered to the dietary laws in Italy, and eating things that were organic and no meat. So I think that we've come round circle when you think about it.
Now, let me ask you a personal question. Do you eat meat?
I'll tell you,
do you eat meat?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes
okay.
I do, and sometimes I get a very strong craving for a piece of steak. I'll be honest with you, but it doesn't happen often. But we do eat at home. We do eat chicken, but we do eat a lot of fish also. So
I would imagine that with all the years that we spent in Italy, that must have left a very, very strong influence on your cooking style.
Absolutely. It really did. You know, when I got to the United States, I had just turned 7, and I remember my mother and my aunt took me to an Italian restaurant. We were living up in the Bronx, and I remember very clearly saying, "Oh, my God, it doesn't taste. Now, this isn't good. It doesn't taste what I was used to." It's funny, isn't it, how memories work?
Yeah.
So, you know, that your taste levels, I think, are formed when you're very little.
Absolutely.
Right? So,
and we're just about out of time.
Okay.
This has been very enlightening. You've been a superb guest.
Thank you.
And I'd love to do this again.
Okay, we will.
Be'ezras Hashem.
All right. Thank you so
much.
And Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Hakasher v'sameach.
Everyone has a sweet and happy Passover.
Thank you very much to one and all, to all our listeners, and to Doris Schechter for being our guest. Thank you, and we'll be back next week at the same station.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.